Across the conversations in this episode, we've been looking at a common challenge. We know a great deal about what children and youth need to learn, develop, and thrive. But the systems we have created to support them are often fragmented, disconnected, and insufficiently responsive to young people, their families, and communities. We have talked about the importance of aligning supports around the whole child, of working across the boundaries that separate schools from other systems, and of listening to youth and families, not simply as recipients of services, but as partners whose knowledge and voice should shape what we do. That brings us to community schools, because community schools give us an opportunity to ask, what do these ideas look like when we try to organize an entire school around them and connect that school meaningfully to the community? Few people have thought about that question more deeply or worked at it longer than Jane Quinn, who spent nearly two decades leading the National Center for Community Schools at the Children's Aid Society and has helped shape the community schools movement nationally. Jane's work challenges us to think about community schools not as places where we simply add more programs or services, but as a fundamentally different way of organizing schools around coherence, relationships, shared responsibility, democracy, and the strengths and needs of children, families, and communities. Schools rarely suffer from a shortage of good intentions. Many have community partners. Many offer health, mental health, after school, family, and other supports. And many educators are working extraordinarily hard to respond to the needs that extend well beyond the classroom. But having more resources in a school does not necessarily mean that those resources add up to something coherent. That is where I want to begin this conversation with Jane Quinn, not with whether schools have partners or programs, but with whether those pieces are organized in a way that students and families can actually experience service and support as coherent. Jane uses a memorable image for the problem, the Christmas tree school. Lots of ornaments, that is programs, but no organizing structure connecting them. The alternative is much more demanding in terms of planning, but much more robust in terms of impact. It means asking students and families in this school what they actually need and bring with them in terms of their assets. It means deciding how partners contribute to the school's central purposes. It means building structures that enable educators, families, community organizations, and young people to work together from a shared understanding of what they aim to accomplish. In other words, the question is not simply what else can we put into a school? It is how do we organize the school differently so that the pieces reinforce one another and ultimately make a difference in the lives and learning of young people? So I want to explore with Jane what that actually requires, and just as importantly, what we have learned about doing this work well. That is where Jane and I begin. Jane, thanks for joining us. I have learned so much from you, as of other people, regarding how to think about community schools, not simply as places where services are located or added, but as a fundamentally different way of organizing schools in their relationship to families, community partners, and the learning that takes place across children's lives. During this overall episode, I've already had conversations with Eric Bruns, Kwesi Rollins, and Ray Saldana, and we've kept returning to a common challenge: fragmented and culturally unresponsive systems and supports. I'd like to build on those conversations now with you and explore what community schools teach us about creating something more coherent, more relational, and more responsive. So let me start with a question. With others, you have long emphasized that community schools are a strategy, not a program model. So let's begin there. What becomes possible when educators and agency leaders understand the community school's are a way of organizing the whole school and its relationships rather than just another initiative added to the school.
This is such a great place to start, David. I think when we say community schools represent a strategy, not a program, what we're talking about is finishing that sentence. A strategy for what? And the best definition I've ever heard of a community school came from a woman named Patricia Harvey when she was the superintendent of schools in St. Paul, Minnesota. I was at a meeting where she spoke, and she said, without a note, she said, in my experience, community schools represent a strategy for organizing school and community resources around student success. I wrote that down. I almost had it tattooed on my arm. I was so enamored of that language. And I think we know a lot about how to organize schools, right? Tony Bryken and his colleagues wrote a whole book about it. And when that book was named on the front page of EdWeek, I made my first Amazon order and I ordered that book and I sat down and read it and I said, he's talking about community schools. Even though his research in Chicago, that is the basis for his book, Organizing Schools for Improvement, really that research took place before the community schools movement in Chicago got started. But he is talking about what effective schools do to organize themselves. So it's a blueprint for how to organize schools. He talks about principal leadership with an inclusive leadership style. Checks the box for community schools. He's talking about coherent curriculum. Yes, coherence. He's talking about building the capacity of the staff at the school to move in the direction of the change. He's talking about school climate. He's talking about authentic family and community engagement. To me, that is a prescription for how you activate this strategy. So, yes, community schools have programs, but the programs are organized around the needs and strengths of the students and families at that school.
As you were talking about Chicago, I remembered the fact that you and I both were at a meeting, a big meeting in Chicago that Arne Duncan had where he was rolling out community schools. And I want to ask you a question about what people should also watch for rather than what to do that activates, because I think the activation is much more important. But it's also important to know how you could go wrong. What happens when school leaders treat a community school just as a collection of programs, just as something that is adjunct?
So we have a name for that in the community schools field. We call that school that has 75 partners where the principal doesn't know what any of the partners are doing. We call that a Christmas tree. And the analogy is that you got a lot of ornaments, but you don't have an organizing theme or an organizing structure. There are lots of schools like that. I've visited some of them. I remember a day many years ago when Marty Blank, who was then head of the Coalition for Community Schools, and I, when I was head of the National Center for Community Schools, we were invited to meet with the National School Boards Association and to do a presentation on community schools. And Marty started the session. So we have a whole room, like a hundred, couple of hundred school board members from all across the country. And Marty asked them, he said, we're going to talk about school community partnerships. How many of you have partners in your schools? Every hand went up. Second question, how many of you have a plan for those partnerships? Can you guess how many hands went up?
Not
Zero. Zero. So I think that was a revelation for them. It was certainly a revelation for us. The way to get a plan for your community school is to do a thorough needs and assets assessment to make sure you are in touch with the strengths and the needs of the students and families, and then to use that data on an ongoing basis to organize the supports and services and opportunities that are linked to the core instructional program.
Let me take that a little further as we move away from the Christmas tree school and move to a place of meaningful, coherent collaboration. If you were meeting with the partners in any particular school, or if it's in a district where there are partners who are working together with the district to work with the schools, what type of evidence would you want to see that there is really meaningful collaboration and shared responsibility among the partners and not just, again, nice meetings that occur once in a while so that we can be ornaments together and have a
Good analogy. I think I'll respond to that with a story about my first visit to a community school. So at the time, I was working at the Wallace Foundation. It was then called the DeWitt Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. And we were looking for examples of effective school community collaboration. We were developing a strategy at a grant at a philanthropic level. And I heard about community schools. I learned about them from Joy Dreyfus and the seminal book that she wrote in 1994 called Full Service Community Schools. And she directed me to a children's aid community school. Little did I know that I would end up working for children's aid for 18 years, but I'm still at the Wallace Foundation. And I went to visit a school that Joy had written about, which is IS 218 in Washington Heights in northern Manhattan, one of the poorest neighborhoods in New York City. And I noticed immediately two kind of striking things. One was, okay, I'm in a middle school, right? The children looked happy. The children looked happy. And the second thing I noticed was just as I was standing in the foyer of the school, I noticed that there were a lot more adults than I was used to seeing in low-income schools. And I said to myself, so here I'm a funder. I have this question, is anybody doing this? And I said, I got to find out what's happening here and let's see if we can make it happen in more places. Another thing I noticed at that school was that at the front door, there was a plaque, not on poster board, a brass plaque that was cemented into the wall. And it said, this is a community school and the lead partner is the Children's Aid Society. So the intention to work on a permanent basis and to change the very nature of the school was imprinted on the walls of the school. When I got to know the school a little bit better, I saw that a couple other things were striking. There was a real estate question. Is the partner in the basement or are they in the center? Are they in the heartbeat of the school? At IS 218, the Student Health Center and the Parent Resource Center were right off the main lobby, with very clear signage, very welcoming approach. Another sign to me when I got to know this school was one day there was a fire drill. Typical, it happens periodically in schools as it should. During the fire drill, it wasn't only the Department of Education employees who participated. The children's aid staff had their role in the fire drills. To me, these are all signs that we are one team. And that language came from Oakland, that we're all part of one team.
That's great. And I'm sure you've done this. If in a school like the school in Washington Heights, you were speaking to students or to families or to teachers or to partners, what would you be hearing from them that would indicate the coherence, the alignment, the centrality of what you're talking about?
Talking about subtle stuff now, right? Yeah. Here's something subtle. When there's a health center or a mental health center run by a partner in the school, are the clinicians willing to take account of the scheduling, the block scheduling in the academic program? Are they willing to accommodate the educators need for their core instructional program? That is a real issue in community schools. I remember hearing an example. So then I went on to work for 18 years as head of the National Center for Community Schools, and I traveled all over the country, and I heard some wonderful stories, and I heard some hair-raising stories. I remember a story from a school in a Midwestern city, which will remain unnamed for the moment because of what I'm going to tell you. And the principal was asking my advice about a program that he wanted to bring into his school. It was a ballroom dancing program, which I thought was really kind of sweet. He said, but the provider can only come during the regular school day. And he said, I don't feel comfortable pulling kids out of the core instructional program for ballroom dancing. I said, you're absolutely right. I said, tell that provider to come back when his schedule changes, not your schedule, right? So I think that is one example of something we pay a lot of attention to in community schools, that the partners have to be willing to honor and respect what the school is doing. I also look for evidence that this kind of integration is going on a structural level. Most schools have something called a school leadership team, or it might have another name, but its role is to oversee the development and implementation of the school's core instructional program. And it is a leadership team that should include the community school director. That's a role we haven't talked about, but it is a structure, a built-in structure for achieving coherence. So the community school director, as the principal's partner, should be on the school leadership team, actually must be on the school leadership team. But parents and other stakeholders should also be on the school leadership team and should have an authentic role in decision making. And of course, students in an age-appropriate way should also be on those teams. So if we are building our structures correctly, and I think the two most important structures are the needs and assets assessment and the community school director. If we are really fully implementing those roles, I think we're on the path to coherence.
You use the word subtle, and it may be subtle, but what you're suggesting to people, which I think is important, is if one can understand what one's trying to do, one needs to focus their flashlight on all the things that are happening on the ground that either make the community school real in the way that you were talking about it, or still make it default into the Christmas tree.
I am really happy that the focus of several really powerful evaluations have looked at implementation as well as results, right? In New York City, the RAND Corporation did a wonderful evaluation of the community schools initiative that was expanded exponentially during the de Blasio administration. And they did a two-part study, first an implementation study, and then a results study, an outcome study. The same thing, I think, showed up in the work of the Learning Policy Institute as they looked across the field at 143 evaluations of community schools. I'm so excited that the field is finally producing this kind of evidence. But both RAND and LPI talked about the importance of implementation, right? So we've learned a lot in this field, and I think we're seeing the results of it as we look out at places like California that have a huge statewide initiative. We see it in the federal full service community schools program that has adopted the findings from the field, including the Learning Policy Institute study. So we have come a long way. But I think what we have learned from all of this is that the quality of implementation really matters.
You mentioned the important initiatives in growth, like what is happening right now in California, where community schools are being built to scale. And we know more and more, as you've said, from good qualitative ethnographic studies that let us have a sense of place, like what you've described. So it's not just a rhetoric, it's not just a concept. As we aspire to doing community schools well, what does excellence require? And let me give it, and since not every school can be a knock your socks off school, and in the next episode 7, we will be focusing in part on the UCLA community school that I visited. And that's a knock your socks off school.
Yes, yeah.
But in work that I've done with national centers, what I've thought about with others is what is good enoughness? Good, but good enoughness, so it may not be excellent, but it really is doing the work that we need to do so that we can enable all young people to thrive. So, based on share your wisdom here.
I think we had a revelation at the National Center, probably in the early 2000s. We were having a kind of in-house retreat and reflecting on our practice and on the practice of people around the country. And we noticed that there seemed to be patterns in the stages of development. And so we found that idea kind of interesting, and we said, let's see if we can flesh that out. And we did. And we developed a framework that now has become part of the field's understanding of this work, that there are stages of development and there are many on-ramps to get you into the first and second stages of development. And what you're talking about, David, I think is that idea that once you decide as a school that you want to organize yourself differently in the Tony Bright kind of way, where you're paying attention to the coherence of the curriculum and the capacity of the staff to work in the direction of the change, then you're on a different trajectory then, right? You might be satisfied being a traditional school with a few partners, but you say that is not working. Let's ratchet it up. Let's get on a different pathway. And then let's understand what the stages of development are to get us to excellence, which is what you're talking about. My goal as head of the National Center was to help everybody who wanted to do this to get to excellence, but to not feel bad that they were at an earlier stage, because we were trying to give them a roadmap to how to get to excellence. So that tool, the stages of development tool, has now become part of the capacity building arsenal. If you, I don't like military terms, but the capacity building arsenal that the field has, and the field has come a long way in achieving consensus about what we are talking about when we talk about community schools. There's an adage in the field that I do not like, where people say, if you've seen one community school, you've seen one community school. No. There are core elements of a community school. There are core structures, and I appreciate your raising that question. And there are core practices that people engage in when they truly collaborate. And so our goal really is to help everybody get to excellence, but to not feel bad if they're at the maturing stage or even at the exploring stage. We haven't talked about something that is related that I want to mention and make sure we talk about the fact that the field has come together and created what is called the Essentials Framework. And this is a way to override that idea that if you've seen one community school, you've seen one community. No, there are essential elements, and the Essentials Framework is a core document in the field and is now helping people get up to speed much more quickly.
I think the Essentials document, which we will make sure is available on our website so people can access it, is important because it's not only that adage that you don't like is not helpful. Even though every place may implement the Essentials in a way that is contextually specific, but it's also to understand the fact that all those elements are essential. It's not that, again, you can have a Christmas tree of essentials and have a few. You really need to have all the pieces.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned that. You can tell I'm in love with the Tony Brack work and its relevance to community schools. And Tony Brack spoke to my heart when he said that organizing schools for improvement, and he has these five elements that are all relevant to community schools. He said, this is like baking a cake. He said, you can't leave out the eggs. You can't leave out the baking powder. The ingredients interact with each other, enliven each other. And I think that is so important in the community schools framework. So I'm a baker. I know I have left out the baking powder once in a while, and it does not work. So, yes, you have to pay attention to all of these elements.
There's a